Let me continue reading then from Psalm 139. We left at verse 12, and I'll read to the end, 13 to 24. Psalm 139, 13 to 24. For it was you who formed my inward parts. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works, that I know very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was being made in secret, intricately woven in the depths of the earth. Your eyes beheld my unformed substance. In your book were written all the days that were formed for me, when none of them as yet existed. How weighty to me are your thoughts, O God! How vast is the sum of them! I try to count them. They are more than the sand. I come to the end. I am still with you. Oh, that you would kill the wicked, O God, and that the bloodthirsty would depart from me. Those who speak of you maliciously and lift themselves up against you for evil. Do I not hate those who hate you, O Lord? And do I not loathe those who rise up against you? I hate them with perfect hatred. I count them my enemies. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my thoughts. See if there is any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. So Psalm 139. Last week we looked at a text from Isaiah. Today a psalm because of the Victoria Day weekend, and next week we'll go back into couple more final churches from the churches of Revelation in chapters 2 and 3. So that's kind of where we're going. Abraham Heschel asked this question, which I've said before: what does the word G-O-D mean for me? So that's a serious question, because we can use the word God frivolously, right? We can use it. People use it all the time. Oh my God, and they're not even thinking about God. It's just a saying. And so Heschel, who is a Jewish scholar, asks the question, what does G-O-D mean for you and for me? So it's a serious question which, deserves reflection. What does Abba mean for me? What does Father mean for me? And whatever name you use to go to God, as you have learned in your growing up days from Bible school and Sunday school, we all have specific names for God that we use. We don't all use the same. So whatever that favorite word is for you, that title for God, what does that mean for you really? So Psalm 139 is asking that, because of all the psalms, all of them, this is the most personal of the 150 psalms. The writer is speaking of God as a God who is in relationship with me. And we'll see that with all the me's and the my's. It's the most personal. God is not some abstract deity out there who created me and has now left. Long-distance relationship. This psalm knows nothing of that. This psalm speaks of a close relationship with God. And so for him or her who wrote it, G-O-D means a God who is an active presence in my life, who I lean on, depend on, trust in. That's this God for me. It is not merely a God that I go to when I'm having a hard time, or when all of a sudden challenges come my way, or I get a bad report, an upsetting report from the doctor. It's not simply that. It's a statement and a reality that God is with me. And so we cannot just assume that, because for many people around the world, God is just simply someone maybe I tune into periodically, or who I believe is there but really has no significance in my actual day-to-day living. But for this writer, God is someone that he depends on closely. So we'll see that as we go. And so it begins with the statement that it's a God who knows us. So I've already alluded to that in the worship time leading up. But you note that this psalm begins with this statement in verse 1, O Lord, you have searched and known me. Begins right with that, right off the top. O Lord, you have searched me and known me. And then if you go right to the end of verse 23, it says, search me, O God, and know my heart. So the entire psalm is bracketed with this statement, God, know me. I want you to know me. Begins with it, ends with it, and everything that happens in between is an example of how God knows. And so we start with this first unit, verses 1 through 6. We just see it. When you know when I sit down and when I rise up, you know all my physical actions. You discern my thoughts from afar. You know my thoughts. You search out my path and my lying down and are acquainted with all my ways. Wherever I go, all my paths, whatever they are. Even before a word is on my tongue, O Lord, you know it completely. He knows all of our words. But for the psalmist, this isn't a scary idea. God, you know me intimately. You know me in every way. And that is a wonderful thing. And I'm glad you know me that way. It is wonderful that you care for me. 7.5 billion people on planet Earth, yet you know me and love me. So it's not an abstract idea. It's not simply saying God is omniscient. You know, we have terms for, theological terms for God, and one is he's omniscient, meaning he knows everything. But the writer is not saying that in some big abstract way. God is omniscient. He knows all. He's saying God knows me. He knows my life. And so, as I noted, verses 1 to 6, all the me's and the my's, whatever translation you're working with, verse 1, you have searched me. Verse 2, you discern my thoughts. Verse 3, you search out my path. Verse 4, even before a word is on my tongue. 5, and lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful. Verse 6, for me. See, all the me's, all the my's. This is unusual. You don't get this in most of the Psalms. He's saying, you know me in an intimate way. You are a present actor in my life. That's who you are. There's a German word, and it's doppelganger. Doppelganger. And doppelganger is a word that stands for, in German, it's double. A double. So someone out there who is looks just like you. And there are people in the world who, man, they if you come across them, you'd think that's you. That's your doppelganger. Now, I don't know if everybody has a doppelganger, but there are lots of people who resemble us very, very closely. Anybody ever met their doppelganger? Yeah, you met one? You met yours? Okay. Here in Toronto? Wow, really, there you go. I've met a few people in Ireland who look pretty weird, and I thought they looked a little bit like me. Man, the Irish are a brutal race, really. You know what I mean? There are some beautiful ones here, but they, man. I met one. He works out at my gym, and he was in one of the Russell Crowe movies, the boxing movie. And this chap, Sean, is an odd-looking chap. He's Irish, totally Irish. He's odd, and he has this very quirky eye, all right? So he's a great guy, but he's got this quirky eye. And he looks so quirky that they said, I want this guy. He's going to be the guy in the corner for Russell Crowe in the boxing movie. And he's on film for about 3 minutes in that whole movie. He's actually filmed for 3 minutes, even has some lines. And the camera zooms in on him, and he's got this quirky eye. He's looking at you, because he's this boxing guy, right? even though he's just helping, he's the trainer. That's my vision of Irish people, whether that's true or not, Sean. Anyway, he is somebody's doppelganger. Maybe he's my doppelganger, okay? But what's my point in all that? But in spite of that, God knows us individually. He knows everybody. Nobody's a duplicate. Nobody's a double. We are all intimately known. God knows us. So the psalmist begins with that point. And it's an encouraging point for him. But God is there for me, and he's there for you, and he's there for your kids. He knows them. We're going to see that. They are known right from the womb. God knows them. So secondly, God is a God who is present with us. Can I flee from God? That's the question, verse 7. Perhaps thinking of Adam and Eve in the garden scene where they do try to hide from God. And God speaks out. Where are you, Adam and Eve? I mean, clearly he knows really where they are, but why are you hiding from me? They're trying. Or we have the example of Jonah who flees to the end of the world that was known at that point because he doesn't want to do what God is asking him to do. And so we, in our own anger, our own disappointment, we can try to flee from God, right? But we can't. God is a God who is present with us. And again, we see it in the text. If I go up to heaven, you are there. Verse 8. If I make my bed in Sheol, you are there in death. If I take the wings of the morning and settle at the farthest islands, we were down in Saba, you know, just a tiny little island. You think you could go to this tiny little island? It's not even on most maps. And get away from God? No way. And there are lovely churches on Saba. You can't flee from God. Even the darkness, surely the darkness shall cover me and the light around me become night. But even the darkness is not dark to you. For darkness is as light to you. You can go right out into space. It doesn't matter where you go. We cannot flee from God's presence. I was thinking about that. And I'm thinking about this. There's a program right now. It's down to 100 Mars. Have you ever heard about that program? So some 250,000 people have applied to be astronauts who want to be part of a mission to become a permanent base on Mars. And it's a serious project. And they're now down from 250,000 to 100 people. And they're going to go from 100 people all the way down finally to 30. And then these will finally be the ones who are chosen, and they're going to blast off. The time frame is within 9 years, not that far away. And they're going to go all the way to Mars. And then after that, every 2 years, there's going to be another group of people who will go. The plan is to grow the base. So the question is, if you and I went to Mars, where we're going to have people one day, could we get away from God? No, right? It takes 2 years to get there, even in the vessel going out a long way. You think, wow, we're out here in the middle of space, out in the middle of darkness. We'll be away from God. But the psalmist is saying, no, that's not the case. You can go all the way to Mars, but God is the God who created Mars, and God's presence is still going to be with them, and I would say that's a very good thing. If I was one of those candidates, I would want to make sure I knew that God was with me on this planet Mars. That's going to be a rough go. People are excited right now, but that's going to be a rough one. We'll see what happens. But God is present with us in every situation. And so for you right now and for your loved ones, you may be going through challenges. I know some of you are, and they are. But we know that God is present with us in every situation, in every challenge, in every difficulty, in every question. Regardless of our movement, God is there. So again, not just a theological statement saying God is omnipresent. Everywhere, God is there. For the writer, this means you are really with me no matter where I go. When I go to work, when I go to school, when I'm with my kids, when I drop them off at a neighbor, whatever it might be, you are present with me. And that's an encouraging piece for this writer. Thirdly, you are an all-creative God. Beautiful statement. You created me, formed me in my mother's womb. All the days are known to you before they happen. God knows already when our last day will be. He knows that. God's presence with us at every point of our existence. I like the statement from Vanier. He has a video series, From the Womb to the Tomb. You are with me from the womb to the tomb. All the way you are there with me. Such a creative God. I love this also, God's knowledge. More thoughts for me than there are grains of sand. There's a lovely beach out on Vancouver Island called Long Beach, and it's 20 miles of beautiful, white, gorgeous sand. I still have some of it in the back of my fit a year later from when I was there. Not purposely, but it's there. And it's lovely, lovely, soft sand. But God's thoughts for us, the psalmist is saying, is more than all of those pieces of sand. How many grains of sand and 20 miles of beach? One of the great strands in the world. And it's used as an example of God's thoughts. Again, not a scary thought, but a wonderful knowledge. He is there. And then it says, I come to the end, and I am still with you. I come to the end. I come to my last breath, your last breath. There will be a final breath, right? I come to the end, and I am still with you. Wow. In fact, Jean Vanier, I was reading a piece by him just yesterday, and he talks about death as a place where we will go from one amazing experience to another. He's saying that the whole... it's like liftoff, man. We finally get liftoff, and we are really sailing with God now. Because all of our own blocks and all of our own baggage that we carry that keeps us so stuck, it's going to be gone, and we just sail off with Him. So Vanier sees. But he's saying, the psalmist, I am still with you. Or it can be translated, I wake up to you. I'm still with you. I wake up to you. I know you in a new and powerful way, in a way I didn't before. And that's a possibility for us here and now, that we can break through to new dynamics, a new experience with God. It doesn't have to be a relationship that plateaus. We can move on in our knowledge of God, know Him more, experience Him more, grow more intimate with Him as the psalmist. Has this psalmist always felt this way? When did he write this in his life? We don't know. There may have been a long time where he felt God was sort of absent and where were you? And now, for whatever reason, he comes to this point and he says, man, you are my God. Not just my parents' God, not just my relatives' God or my friends' God, but you are my God. I wake up to that dynamic. That's the third piece. And then it comes to this fourth one, which at first startles us. You might have been startled when I read it. And all of a sudden it just breaks into this evil. And we say, well, where did that come from? That sounds like another psalm. Maybe somebody has just kind of added this little bit. Verse 19. Verse 18 says, I come to the end, I'm still with you. And then verse 19 says, oh, that you would kill the wicked, O God, and that the bloodthirsty would depart from me. Was anybody startled a little bit when I read that? Like, I think it reads a bit like that. We wonder, like, why? Sounds harsh. But I would say from the psalmist's perspective, he's not meaning that. He's not speaking against specific actions of evil, I would say. He's speaking to the reality of evil in our world, and he's saying, you know what? It just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense when there are wars, when there is genocide, where there is hatred, and prejudices, and racism, and evil that's committed because of those thoughts. It just doesn't make sense. Why would we live in such a divided world? And the psalmist is saying, I don't get it. And you know what? I stand against it, he says. I stand against all these evil opposing powers to God that speak against God and work against him. I mean, in our world, for example, it just doesn't make sense, I would say, that there is this tiny portion of humankind that controls 40 to 50% of all the monies that are out there. That honestly doesn't make sense. And I would think at some point it's got to change. It will not continue that way for hundreds and hundreds of years, I believe. It will finally change because people won't accept it. You can't have people dying and having nothing while there is a tiny little bit that have so much. It doesn't work that. How can it go that way? But presently it does. It has for a long time. I see this, and the psalmist says, I don't like it. And I stand against it. It's counterproductive. It disintegrates life rather than integrates life. And how he sees it is he finally says to himself, Lord, test me. So he's asking, you know what? I don't want any wickedness in me. So I see it out there, but Lord, if you see it in me, then get rid of it in me. I don't want it there either. He's just asking that the Lord will search, will know, and will do his work. And of course, that's ultimately what the next life is about, is a life where we are all, every single person, committed to shine in the light and to know God and to serve him. What does he want? He wants to travel in the way everlasting. That's a lovely statement. I want to know God, and I want to find myself on the way that leads to life. Lead me in the way everlasting. So search me, know me. Psalm begins with that, ends with that, uses all these statements in the middle, Lord, know me, search me. So where does it end? So the first statement I would say is that it presents this God who is in relationship with us and who does indeed know our name. We're going to sing that song right after this talk. God knows our name. He knows our every turn. And he knows it in a gentle, compassionate, gracious way. He knows the baggage that you and I carry. What has made us to be the way we are? He knows that. He knows where we've been deprived, where it hasn't worked out for us. He knows all that. He knows your situations as a little kid. He knows your parents when they go way back to a little kid's. And so if somebody picks up something, it can be negative, it's passed along. You see it again, and then it goes again. God knows all that. And he is a compassionate God. He suffers with us, travels with us, knows us. It's a beautiful statement. He knows your name. He knows who you are. Following this service, Dave was telling me we have a baby dedication. Who's here for the baby dedication? Anybody? Yeah? Good, good, good. Where's David? David, what's the name of the baby? Or you tell me. What's the name of the baby? Nivea.
Which is heaven spelled backwards.
Wow. Beautiful. Nivea. Can you imagine? Nivea is... Oh, here's Nivea right here. Hello, Nivea. Totally asleep. Got her bunny. Everything is cool. Nivea is doing well. Well, there's Nivea. Nivea, how old is Nivea? How old?
4 months.
Around 4 months. Imagine that. Is with on planet Earth for 4 months. And the text tells us that God knows Nivea in a way that transcends what the parents, the relatives know. God knows Nivea in this deep, deep way, and he knows us in that way. And that's a beautiful thing. We need to trust and depend and lead. So we go to the New Testament. What does that mean? Well, it becomes in Jesus. Jesus now becomes God knowing us in a personified way. He is now the Son. the Son of God, and he knows us. And so you know the story of Jesus at the woman in the well, John 4. And the woman comes, and Jesus asks her to give me a glass of water, a cup of water. She's startled by this. This is not the way it goes down normally in that time. And then Jesus keeps pressing, and he says, if you knew what was really going on here, I could give you water that would quench your thirst forever. Wow. And then her response is what? I want that. I want that water. Give me some of that water. So God, Jesus, knows the woman at the well, knows her intimately. Beth is writing a paper on this right now for a journal. She's using an Avicen poem, and at the end, the question is, what happens to this woman when she goes away after the event, right? To that, he knows her in that moment. Well, what happens when she goes back to the town later? We know she goes back and people come back out with her. But 2 months later, 6 months later, how is that woman at that point? Well, hopefully and probably she has been changed. She's been changed by this encounter. Jesus knows us, and he knows you, he knows me, he knows Nivea, he knows all of our own kids, all the little ones who went down to Sunday school. God knows them, Jesus knows them, calls them. No surprises, he knows us all. And Jesus is the one who knows us. And so we are called then to trust and to depend and know finally that God is on our side. Psalm 139 is saying God is on your side. He's on your side. You have enough people who aren't on your side, right? You have enough people who are giving you a heck here and there, whatever. It can be within your family. It can be people at work. You got enough of that. God isn't there just looking over to scold you every time you turn around. He is there for you. He's there for me as the compassionate God. Why? Because he knows us completely. And he is just waiting there to receive us, to welcome us. And when we transcend and go to the next level, we will be received and welcomed by Jesus and those who he sends to meet us. Won't that be a beautiful thing? So the psalmist is encouraged, and I hope on this long weekend, this Victoria Day weekend, that we will be grateful for what God is doing, who he is, what he's doing in our lives, and give him praise. May that be our response. Invite the praise team forward. We're going to sing that song, He Knows My Name. He knows your name. Not just in an abstract way, not just in a theological term, but he knows us intimately. He knows my name. He knows your name. Amen. Amen. Amen.